And much of the nation is reeling today from the news that the officers who killed 26-year-old Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky this spring will not be charged for that. Taylor was shot and killed by police during a raid on her apartment in March, and a grand jury indicted a former Louisville detective for wanton endangerment for his actions during the raid. But no charges were announced against the other two officers who fired shots, six of which led to Taylor's death. Here in Boston, demonstrators gathered for a rally in Franklin Park.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No racist!
Police!
No justice!
No peace!
And here's local activist Monica Cannon Grant, who organized the rally.
Today we got bad news. I think for a lot of the black community, though, it wasn't a surprise. We're just disappointed.
And during a press conference today, Governor Charlie Baker called what happened to Breonna Taylor a terrible tragedy.
Unfortunately, in our country, too many tragedies like this befall people of color, and far too often. I think everybody appreciates the pain and the loss being felt and suffered by her family and her loved ones during this incredibly unimaginable time.
So many people reflecting, and so today we are taking stock of how our city and our Commonwealth is reacting to the news, and we want to give you a chance to share how you're feeling. What is your reaction to the Breonna Taylor news, especially after a summer full of protest and unrest around policing in this country? Did it surprise you, or did you somewhat expect it? Where do you think things go from here? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or tweet us at Radio Boston. We have two guests joining us for the conversation. First is Renee Graham, columnist for the Boston Globe, joins us on the line. Renee, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Renee. Thanks for being here. And also with us is Michael Curry, the former president of the Boston chapter of the NAACP. He now works with the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers and is also a member of the National NAACP Board of Directors. Welcome back, Michael.
Hey, glad to be here, Tatiana.
And Renee, I'll start with you. Where are your heart and your head today?
You know, it's just about 24 hours now, and, you know, I'm as I've been so many times this year, I'm really exhausted. You know, I'm horrified by the decision. I'm disgusted, but I'm not at all surprised. You know, this was a disgrace and atrocity. You know, Breonna Taylor's been dead for more than 6 months, and the men who killed her will never see the inside of a prison cell for shooting her to death in her own apartment. I don't even know how to make sense of this except to look at the fact that it continually happens. And I found it especially poignant yesterday that, you know, it was September 23rd, which was also the 65th anniversary of the verdict that acquitted the two men who killed Emmett Till in 1955 in Mississippi. He was a 14-year-old. Black teenager from Chicago who was visiting relatives in Mississippi and was kidnapped, tortured, and murdered and dumped in the river. And, you know, the fact that on that 65th anniversary, you know, here was the black community again, black America one more time, getting no justice again is just the most sinking and sickening feeling.
Michael, I'm just going to invite you to add your voice.
You know, I use a term often that researchers use of being weathered. Weathered being when you get used to something that's not normal, that's not healthy, but you get used to it. And I think many Americans, particularly Black Americans, have become weathered to the outcomes in these cases. Most of the officers are not held accountable. People point to the civil side as if that's some resolution for a family that lost a loved one. And there's no accountability for officers who take lives or who just violate the rights of African Americans. This is not new. And if we allowed ourselves to get overwhelmed by every case, it would be torturous for us. And I think about George Zimmerman and how I had a youth program in the NAACP at the time, and I had them debate whether I do, you know, I've split the room up and made half the room argue for George Zimmerman's defense and the other half of the room argue for his conviction. And I did that for a reason. which is I wanted them to understand our legal process that often results in these folks not being held accountable. We got to understand it, and unfortunately, it's how our system works. I was not surprised in this case, and I don't think many attorneys were.
You know, I want to say we talk about the lack of accountability. Let's put then in context the charges that were incurred against the former detective Henkison for wanton endangerment, for firing shots in the apartment that threatened essentially neighbors. Where do you put that indictment in this landscape? And Renee, I'll start with you.
I think the fact that they came back with this charge of wanton endangerment was almost really adding insult to the very deep injury. And in the sense that a wall that got pierced by a bullet got more legal redress than a black woman shot to death by the police in her own bed. And I guess if all the bullets had hit Breonna Taylor, there wouldn't have been any charges at all. You know, and I think that, you know, Michael made an interesting point when he was sort of talking about these multi-million-dollar settlements, and Breonna Taylor's family got a $12 million settlement from the city last week. And, you know, but money isn't justice. It's not justice for Breonna Taylor the same way it wasn't justice for Eric Garner or Tamir Weiss or Michael Brown or Rakia Boyd or so many others who've been killed, you know, in the last decade or so. Those money's paid by taxpayers and not, say, police pensions, so there is no accountability, or the kind, at least, that fosters real sweeping change.
I just want to put the number out, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I'd like to take a call. We have Kathleen on the line from Falmouth. Kathleen, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm calling mostly because I'm calling because, can you hear me?
Yeah. Kathleen, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm calling because my son works for Boston EMS, and this weekend, on Saturday, they are burying a black female EMT who is considered an active duty death in the city of Boston. And I feel like I haven't heard anything about Regina. And I certainly want her honored for her work with Boston EMS. It doesn't have to do with a police shooting, and it doesn't have to do with, poor care. But it does have to do with, you know, her being a first responder here and actually contracting COVID. And it wasn't a COVID death per se, but I'm just kind of astounded. I feel like if she was a white EMT, I just feel like I would hear it on the news. Maybe I'm wrong.
Thanks for that, Kathleen. Let me give Michael Curry a chance to respond to that.
Yeah, you know, I think, again, it's the broader conversation about racism and how it manifests in our society. There are black businesses that don't get the attention they should. There are black deaths and from a myriad of reasons that doesn't get the attention it deserves or the recognition it deserves. That is racism, right? It manifests itself in so many parts of our society. Specific to Breonna Taylor, though, I want folks to think about how our system works, right? There is often no justice in these cases. And if we know our system, right? I always say that if this was a young white boy and a group of black officers, or just a group of officers, it doesn't have to be black, had walked into the wrong apartment or with very speculative or tenuous information that granted a warrant signed by a judge, had walked in and killed someone, and it turned out there were no drugs found, no guns found, there was no crime committed, and it was some relationship she had with an ex-boyfriend or ex-friend or friend. The white community or that community at large would be upset and angry, and they would vote differently. They would be using their power, their leverage to make change. And in this case, the young black woman, which raised the question, do black lives matter? Because if you're a white person sitting anywhere in the Commonwealth right now or in New England, and the Breonna Taylor murder seems like collateral damage to you, then you don't get it. Black lives should matter to you, and you should be just as upset as that family.
Renee, in listening to Michael, it makes me think of the piece that you wrote, I want to say it was about 4 weeks ago now, where you talked about the drop off of white people's attention to racism and polling about white people in our community saying whether it still matters after high levels of attention and intensity in June. And that just really resonates given what Michael just said.
Well, you know, you look at some of the protests that have come after the decision around the Breonna Taylor case, and you want to ask, where are you now? You know, where are all the white people? A lot of comment was made back in June after George Floyd was killed about, you know, how diverse the groups were and how diverse the protesters were. Where is it now? You know, where are those same people? Those same people who, you know, ran out and did all these great performative things like put Black Lives Matter signs up in their windows and get their bumper stickers. Where are they now? You know, what I never understand when these cases happen is why isn't there more national outrage outside of communities of color? Everyone should be upset about this. Everyone should be concerned that too many police officers have a shoot first, ask questions later, if they ask questions at all. And I never get the sense of that. There's no reason why Black America should have to bear the burden of this alone. This should be outrageous to everyone. But again, we see the people who are, you know, the most affected are really the only ones, with some exceptions, who tend to react. You know, it makes me feel like what we saw in June was really much more of a mirage than some sort of a sea change.
I want to ask Michael and Renee if you'll sit tight for a second, because I want to do a call out to another voice here, who is Hoden Hashi. She's with the organization Black Boston, which represents the voices of young people of color. And this summer, she co-organized a march protesting police brutality that drew thousands. Hoden, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hello. Thank you for having me again.
Hoden, I just want to ask you how you're reacting today.
Yeah, I feel like I can kind of just echo a lot of what has already been said. It's an overwhelming feeling of being extremely disappointed while also not necessarily being surprised. I feel like a lot of people my age can kind of agree that we've grown up in a climate where, one, things like this are happening time and time and again. It feels like it's happening every single year at this point. And just, you know, with the existence of social media now, it is quite literally at our fingertips. So it's not a feeling that is easily escapable, and it can be all-consuming in a lot of ways. So I'm definitely just feeling a lot of that today.
Hoden, I want to play a bit of sound for you from Monica Cannon Grant, who organized last night's demonstration in Franklin Park. Here she is.
Black women are dying at the hands of police. Black women are dying in healthcare. Black women are dying in education. We're dying across the board. And we're basically saying, stop killing us.
You are a young Black woman. How are you holding it together?
It's definitely been difficult, if I'm being completely honest. I feel like there's a lot of different layers to what is kind of going on in my head at the moment. I kind of started the work that I've been doing this summer with two other Black women that were my age. And, you know, a big reason why we do what we do is because of what happened to Breonna Taylor. On top of, you know, the conversation of racism in America, there's also the conversation of misogyny in this country. And Black women kind of, you know, are on the losing end of both of those spectrums. It can be very discouraging to kind of think about it from that perspective while still being, you know, at the forefront of starting these conversations. I feel like in a lot of different ways, Black women are at the forefront of starting these conversations, whether it's through activism, whether it's, you know, in the political realm, whether it's through journalism, all those things. We seem to be the loudest voices while also being the ones that are, you know, asking for the most help at the same time. So it's frustrating, but it's something that I have unfortunately had to become very used to seeing and hearing and talking about.
Hoden, I appreciate you spending some time talking with us about it today. That's Hoden Hashi, an activist with Black Boston. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Michael, I want to give you a chance just to respond there before I go to another call.
Yeah, so one, just to Hoden Hashi and Monica Cannon Grant and so many others here and across the country. Thank you for your commitment to this struggle. Thank you for organizing. I know Monica. Monica's a good friend. They're getting in good trouble. This is what John Lewis talked about in the tradition of a Diane Nash or Dr. King or John Lewis and so many others. Thank you for your service in this. Two, just maybe a quick comment about the need to change laws. We're in a moment right now that there's a police reform bill in the legislature and conference committee, House 4886 and Senate 2820. That bill could come out of conference watered down, and we might not meet the moment, right? That's the challenge we have when we march in the street. You got to show up for the legislation. You got to call the members of your congressional delegation, or in this case, the legislature, and demand that the bill meet the moment, that it be a strong piece of legislation that prevents these kind of murders, that prevents police misconduct and holds law enforcement accountable. If we don't do that and we pass something that just some people can take a lap and feel like they've done something significant that's not, we should all be angry at ourselves for letting it happen.
I'd like to take another call here. We have Arlene on the line from Salem. Arlene, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. I am not surprised at all by the verdict that that came down, or the lack of verdict. It is a sad day for all of us in the United States, and I really feel that. I live here in Boston. This took place in Louisville, Kentucky, but people are people, and it is a shame. It's a darn shame that we are functioning the way that we are, so, pulled apart and not taking into account human beings. We are all human beings, and all lives, like our, especially Black lives, and coming from a Latino, a brown person, and I have two sons that are very dark-skinned, and I worry about them every single day.
Arlene, thanks for adding your voice. I appreciate it. And Renee, we are in a moment of possible accountability here in the Commonwealth. Police reform is being negotiated. Michael was talking about the laws that need to be passed. How are you feeling about the police reform moment in Massachusetts in this context and in this moment?
I feel like as these things go, there's all this enthusiasm. Then it actually gets onto the floor, and then it starts getting picked apart and watered down. And the police are complaining that they feel unsupported and the morale is low. And then the moment starts to fade. And I think that's what starts to happen. It's like there's all this attention, and then they kind of wait for it to quiet down and then to pass, to quote a Prince lyric, something close to nothing. And that's not going to meet the moment. It wasn't going to meet the moment 3 months ago, 4 months ago now, when George Floyd died. It's not going to meet the moment now. And it's not about these things that happen in these other places, because what happens there is happening here. This is one of these are national tragedies. And so I think the legislature has to get this right. And if they don't get it right, then they need to be voted out. There need to be legislators who understand what it means to meet the moment, to bring about the accountability that's been denied for decades. This is the moment to do it. And if they don't, they need to go.
So, Michael,
Anna, one additional point on. I want to acknowledge as activists on this airing today that, one, our prayers go out to those two officers that were shot in their vehicle. Our prayers go out to those officers who were shot recently in Louisville and others across the country. Blue lives have always mattered, right? Most Americans mourn when there's a law enforcement officer killed or first responder. That's true for most of the country. But I don't see most of the country mourning when an African-American is shot or we die at a higher rate of every disease you can think of. There are all kind of indicators that Black lives don't matter because we don't hear that same outcry. We don't see that same concern. We don't hear that same concern from our white brothers and sisters across the country. That is the problem. We know blue lives matter. We know all lives should matter. But do Black lives matter? And I think everyone has to answer that question for themselves.
Just briefly, I did an event over the weekend where I got a chance to talk to Dr. Ibram Kendi. And one of the things he did was call Boston to its abolitionist past, you know, in the 1850s. And the fiber we have to agitate for real change. Renee, do we still have that fiber among us now? And how do we mobilize it?
You know, if we don't, we need to find it. I mean, Boston gets a lot of credit because of the abolitionist movement. The abolitionist movement here, if you study it, was a little bit more complicated than presented. You know, there were certainly people who were anti-slavery but weren't necessarily pro-black. So, you know, that's its own thing. But, you know, you have to come up to the moment. I don't see how Boston or any other city gets away with doing the least it can possibly do. The moment demands more. The citizens demand more. You know, this can't fall on the activists. I worry about Monica Bannon Grant, who I haven't met, but she's doing so much. And what this process does is it breaks your heart again and again. So the city needs to step up. The legislatures need to step up. They've got to get this done.
Renee Graham of the Boston Globe, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Michael Curry of the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers, thanks to you too.
Thank you.
And I want to thank Renee and Michael for continuing to have these difficult conversations with us. I know we'll keep having them, and I thank all of our listeners for calling in and engaging. That's our show for today. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.